Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a case that's really a landmark, right? Where music and trademark law meet. Commodore's Entertainment Corp v. McCleary. Now, for anyone, navigating the legal side of bands and IP, this one's pretty essential. We've gone through the court documents to bring you the crucial bits from this dispute over a band name.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Our mission today, to pull out the core trademark principles from this case, especially about band names when members leave, and figure out what this really means, particularly if you're, say, heading into law or already in the music biz.
Exactly. And it's not just, abstract legal theory. This is a really concrete example of how trademark law plays out in the real world, specifically the music world.
Mm-hmm.
And for everyone listening, especially law students, this case offers a practical lens, really, to understand key IP concepts. Think of it like a real-world case study.
Okay, so let's set the scene a bit. We're talking the Commodores. I mean, truly iconic funk and soul band formed way back in 68.
Legends.
Thomas McCleary was a founding member, and they had just phenomenal global success, hit after hit. I mean, Brick House, right? Everyone knows that one. McCleary was a big part of that sound for a long time.
Oh, undeniably. Their impact was huge, and McCleary was there right from the start shaping that identity.
But then in 1984, McCleary decides, okay, time for a solo career.
Uh-huh.
We see this happen, right? Bands change, members go off on their own artistic paths. Now, let's fast forward quite a bit to 2014. McCleary starts touring again.
Mm.
But he's using names like the Commodores featuring Thomas McCleary and even the 2014 Commodores. And this is where the legal stuff really kicks in.
Precisely. Because, in all those years between him leaving and him starting to tour again under those names, the other members of the Commodores kept going.
Right. They didn't stop.
They kept performing, build on the legacy. They formed Commodores Entertainment Corporation, CEC, and this is crucial, they registered trademarks for the Commodore's name.
Oh.
So when McCleary started using similar names later on, well, that set the stage for a trademark infringement lawsuit.
And that's exactly what happened. CEC sued McCleary. They basically said, look, you left the band, we own the trademark to the name now, and you using it like this is confusing people.
Yeah, it causes confusion.
So the heart of the legal fight was really over who gets to commercially use the Commodore's name after McCleary split.
And the courts, well, they ultimately sided with CEC. The whole thing kind of unfolded in two main phases.
Okay.
Phase one, the district court made a really key decision. They ruled McCleary had legally abandoned his trademark rights to the band's name way back when he left in 84.
Abandoned them. Wow.
The court figured those rights belonged to the members who stuck around and kept performing, so they were validly assigned to CEC. They even issued a preliminary injunction, basically a court order, telling McCleary to stop using the name in certain ways while the case was still going.
And then phase two, that took it further.
It did. A jury actually found McCleary liable for trademark infringement. They agreed his use of the name violated CEC's rights.
Okay.
And they awarded damages to CEC. McCleary appealed, of course, took it to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, but the appellate court, they agreed with the lower court's rulings, affirmed. So, yeah, it was a pretty long legal road.
Definitely sounds like it. And through all that, it brought up some really critical legal questions, didn't it?
It really did. First, like we said, ownership. Who actually controls the band's trademark when someone leaves?
Right.
Second, infringement. Did McCleary's use of the Commodore's name, actually confuse consumers? Would fans think his shows were connected to the original or current band?
Makes sense.
And third, there was this international angle. Could a U.S. court stop McCleary from performing overseas using a name that infringed the U.S. trademark?
Those are, fundamental questions for IP in music. And the court's answers give us some pretty clear guidelines. Let's dig into those specifics, starting with ownership. The court really hammered home this idea of continuous use and control, right? That was the basis for trademark rights.
That's like trademark law 101. It's not just about who thought of the name first. It's about who consistently uses it in the market and controls the brand identity tied to it.
Okay.
In this case, even after McCleary left in 84, the remaining guys kept performing as the Commodores, kept building that goodwill, and eventually they formalized it by registering the trademarks.
Exactly. And the court put it really bluntly, didn't they? Something like, leaving the group meant leaving the name.
Yep. Short, sweet, and gets right to the point of their reasoning. For any law students listening, this really shows that trademark rights aren't automatically tied just to, you know, being there at the beginning.
Right. It's not like founding status guarantees eternal rights to the name itself.
Exactly. And the court also stressed that trademarks aren't like personal property you can just split up for different people to use independently at the same time.
Yeah, imagine the chaos.
Right. Think about it. If every former member of a famous band could tour under slightly different versions of the name, it'd be a nightmare for fans, for promoters, for everyone. Total confusion.
Total mess. And it's interesting, you mentioned even if there wasn't some super formal written agreement right at the start, the court looked at how the band actually operated early on, their conduct, as showing they intended to own the name jointly.
Yeah, that's a really valuable point for anyone in any kind of partnership, not just bands.
Yeah.
A clear written agreement is always, always best, but how people actually act, how they run things together, that can be important evidence of what they understood about IP rights, even without a perfect contract.
Okay, good point. Now, infringement, the court seemed pretty straightforward on this too. McCleary using the Commodores in his tour names, that was likely to confuse people.
Precisely. I mean, that's the whole point of trademark law, right? To stop that kind of confusion. If a fan sees the Commodores featuring Thomas McCleary, it's totally reasonable they might think he's still part of the official group.
Yeah, you'd assume some connection.
Exactly. And that's the kind of potential harm to the brand's reputation and goodwill that trademark law is designed to prevent. It protects that established name and the trust people have in it.
And then there's that really interesting part, the extraterritoriality. How does a U.S. court tell someone they can't use a name for shows happening outside the U.S.?
Yeah, that gets into something called the effects doctrine. Basically, U.S. courts can have jurisdiction over stuff happening abroad if that conduct has a significant predictable impact inside the U.S.
Okay, so what was the impact here?
Well, the court reasoned that McCleary playing shows in Europe using a name so close to the Commodores could hurt CEC's brand in the U.S. It could weaken their trademark's distinctiveness, confuse American fans maybe traveling abroad, or even seeing promotions online. It ripples back.
Got it. So it wasn't just about the European shows themselves, but their potential effect back home. Okay, so wrapping things up a bit, what are the big practical legal takeaways here? What's the core message from Commodores v. McCleary?
I think the single biggest legal takeaway is this.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, when you leave a band, you leave the trademark rights to the band's name behind too, unless there's a specific written agreement saying something else.
Right. The agreement is key.
Absolutely. The court flat out rejected McCleary's argument that just because he was a founder, he inherently kept rights to use the name. What matters most in trademark law is who's actively using and controlling the mark in the marketplace.
That's such a crucial distinction. It's not about history alone. It's about current activity and control. In this case, it really reinforces broader trademark principles beyond just band names, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. It backs up the idea that common law trademarks, the rights you get just through use, need both priority, being first to use it consistently, and continuous control over the quality and reputation linked to that mark. And like we talked about with the international stuff, it shows that U.S. court orders, injunctions, can reach overseas if there's a direct substantial impact back in the U.S. market.
So the absolute non-negotiable advice for any band, any artist collaboration really has to be get it in writing.
Yes, 100%.
Clear, legally solid agreements about who owns the name, how it can be used if someone leaves. It's just essential to avoid these kinds of fights later.
Absolutely. Being proactive with comprehensive legal agreements is honestly the best way to avoid really costly, really time-consuming court battles over IP rights. Saves so much headache.
Now, thinking about our listeners, especially the law students tuning in, why is Commodores v. McCleary a case they should really pay attention to for their legal education?
Well, it's such a compelling and honestly pretty relatable example of trademark law in action. You see all the core concepts playing out. Ownership fights, what counts as infringement, the difference between common law rights and registered marks, even complex stuff like international jurisdiction.
Right.
It takes those principles you read about in textbooks and shows you how they apply in a real dynamic industry like entertainment. Makes it much less abstract.
And it really shines a light on that balancing act courts have to do, doesn't it? Protecting the brand's value and reputation, but also acknowledging someone's history with that brand.
Exactly. The court wasn't saying McCleary couldn't say he used to be in the Commodores. That's factual history. But they drew a clear line at him using the band's name commercially in a way that would likely confuse the public. That's the boundary.
It's also interesting looking at the strategy, you know. CEC having those registered trademarks definitely helped them, gave them clear proof of ownership.
No doubt. That formal registration carries weight. McCleary tried to challenge those registrations at the Patent and Trademark Office, but ultimately, that didn't overcome the strong common law rights CEC had already built up through all those years of continuous use and control.
That's a key lesson too, isn't it? Registration is powerful, but those foundational common law rights built through actual use are often the bedrock. Finding that first foundational use is critical in any trademark fight.
Absolutely paramount.
So pulling it all together then, the big lessons from our deep dive into Commodore's Entertainment Corp. v. McCleary really hammer home how crucial clear agreements about IP are in any group project, and the serious legal consequences if you use a trademark without permission, even if you helped create it originally.
Precisely. It just powerfully shows that trademark rights follow the ongoing use and control in the market, not just who was there at the start.
Right. Okay, so on that note, here's a final thought for everyone listening. With collaborations and people moving between projects becoming so common everywhere, not just music, what are those absolutely essential conversations and agreements people need to have right at the beginning to stop these kinds of IP fights before they start? Something to chew on. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.